Mr. Von Lowe?
Yes.
Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Justices, how are you today? Justices, opposing counsel, may it please the court. My name is Derek Von Lowe. I'm here on behalf of the appellant in this matter, Joseph Bettercase. I'm here to present some argument for him on behalf of his appeal that he has filed in this matter. I think there are some issues that I would like to touch on out of Mr. Bettercase's brief. First of all, I think one of the most glaring issues here is the fact that there is a Brady versus Maryland violation that occurred with Mr. Bettercase that has never been resolved. Issues that have still not been provided to Mr. Bettercase, albeit through his federal case. And I think that in the brief of appellee, they admit that there was a Brady violation in this matter for Mr. Bettercase. However, that's never been resolved.
Which of the various motions that are on appeal here do you contend puts the Brady issue before us?
Well, I think the motion for new trial, I think, as well as his motion to vacate the post-conviction, I think both of those bring that issue forward. The information was not produced. I think that our statute 29-1912 is very specific. It's a very, very broad statute. I think it is more broad than what Brady versus Maryland says needs to be provided to counsel during discovery. And I think it was a real prejudice to the defendant. For example, let's talk about the Dr. Kriegmeier and her report that was not given. That is something that certainly the appellee admits that was not ever given to the defendant or the appellee or appellant, excuse me. And I think that he also, I mean, the fact that at trial, his trial counsel attempted to field Ms. Kriegmeier's testimony, I think that doesn't, it equates to his trial counsel basically doing discovery in front of a jury. And I think that is extremely unfair to any litigant. And I think his trial counsel probably tried their best to field the issues around Ms. Kriegmeier's testimony about the DNA. However, I think that one thing that Mr. Bettercase brings forward is that there are some issues with the DNA. There was someone else's DNA that was present at the time, which blows out of the water the timeline that is presented by the appellee as to the testimony of the alleged victim here at trial about where they were and how that day progressed for that DNA to be that third party DNA to be present. And I think that if that would have been known to Mr. Bettercase and his trial counsel at the time, bottom line is that would have been an issue that they could have resolved. They could have had an expert come in, possibly had some other testing done, which I think goes to Mr. Bettercase's request that from the court that he be allowed to do some further testing. He videos of consensual acts between the alleged victim here and Mr. Bettercase. I think that those were not produced, and
did he not know about them?
No, he knew about them. However, I don't think it's the defendant's duty to ask for production of things that are in the possession of the state at the time of trial and during discovery. I think during discovery it's supposed to be provided. And I believe if we look at the statute 29-1912, if you look at the statute, it's extremely broad about what's supposed to be produced. And I believe that they just didn't, those things were not produced, and I don't think that it's Mr. Bettercase's duty to pursue those items when they're in the possession of the state. I think the state had a duty to produce those. I think
you believe these were exculpatory?
I do believe they have some exculpatory evidence, and it would have provided an alternate theory for the defense at trial to be able to pursue that this was a normal relationship that these two parties had, and that was certainly exculpatory as far as it comes to his conviction. I think that one thing that was really interesting about the discovery issue is that the district court had to order the prosecution in this matter to produce up a list of what items were allegedly given to the defendant at the time. If you look at Judge Johnson's orders back then, she had to order them to produce up a list of all those items that were produced to the defense. They did not volunteer those items, and I think that is something that is very telling. I think they say that the report was given. However, there was no mention of the report during his testimony or during the cross-examination that was done by trial counsel of the DNA expert, anything regarding her report. And I think that although the appellee wants to say that her testimony mirrored the report, however, that is not having the report, the same as having the report and that information beforehand to be able to properly prepare the case for trial.
What do you contend would have happened differently had your client had the report?
Well, I think that, first of all, they would have had an opportunity to maybe have some other testing done on the DNA samples, perhaps be able to consult with an expert to find out whether there was something else that they could do with that DNA. Also, it would have been impeachment testimony against the alleged victim's testimony about the fact of what her timeline of the events of that day. And I think that that would have been very significant to both the jury and as well as to the defendant to be able to present that kind of evidence. I think the next thing I'd like to discuss is the amendment of the post-conviction pleading and the constitutionality question that Mr. Buttercase raised on the 29301 et sequentia. Basically, I think what has happened here is that I distill from Mr. Buttercase's arguments in his brief that basically the holding of this court in State versus Robertson, I think, has been misapplied. And where I think it's been misapplied is that, first of all, Robertson seems to create classes of individuals that we are going to treat differently on appeal than other convicted defendants. And I think that is something that is incorrect. I think that's not constitutionally viable under both federal and state constitutional due process rights. I think that Robertson was distinguished from Mr. Buttercase's time when he amended his post-conviction motion. That was after he received the discovery in his federal case of where the report, DNA report, was there, and some other evidence that had not been disclosed in the disclosures required in the trial, his initial state trial, were brought forward. And basically that is, I think those are some real, I think that Robertson, the holding of Robertson is fine as long as we make sure that when we look at post-conviction pleadings that we are giving them the benefit of the doubt on a pro se individual, that we have a broad reading. I believe that's what the Constitution requires, the federal Constitution requires, and I think that I think putting those strict rules under Robertson, I think we need to go back to MATA. I think MATA is what states the correct law here, and I think is distinguishable from Robertson. And again, Robertson's distinguished from Mr. Buttercase's motion for post-conviction relief from the standpoint.
What is your authority that Robertson went too far?
Well, I think that the federal Constitution says that we are to liberally construe and ensure that there's some adversarial testing that's done for those items. I think I don't have a specific
what part of the Constitution.
Well, I think due process says that you're to give a liberal reading to those pleadings that are done by pro se individuals. And let me see if I think I understand that you don't want to provide the and I think the interpretations under Brady too I think, say that they're supposed to be liberally construed for the defendant when you're taking a look at the pro se pleadings. And I think that that's our jurisprudence, and I think that we need to follow that federal jurisprudence when we apply that here in a state action. I believe my time's up. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Vincent, good morning to you.
May it please the court, my name is Melissa Vincent, and I represent the Appalachia, the state of Nebraska. First and foremost, I have not conceded anything on any Brady issues. I don't believe there were any here, and frankly, I think the notion that the state did not turn over the DNA report prior to trial is absurd. Clearly, Mr. Troia knew about it. He didn't act like he was surprised. In any event, there's really, you know, I believe he's also misreading the report. He is reading the way that they normally couch that language, a mixture of two or more individuals, to mean that there was a third person. He's also interpreting some of the results, like, for example, one of her vaginal swabs. What they said was both Buttercase and the victim were included, but they couldn't determine who the major contributor was. Well, I think he's interpreting that report to mean that the major contributor is some third party. It's not. With respect to the pleading requirements, I would first note that we are under no obligation to provide post-conviction procedures, period. This Constitution doesn't require it. If we do, we can establish reasonable procedural requirements for that, which is exactly what we have done. I don't think that we have distinguished between death penalty defendants differently than other defendants. What the court said in Robertson was basically we don't apply the civil rules of civil procedure or the civil rules of procedure when we're doing this. In my case, it was before Robertson had come out, and the state had managed to convince Judge Corslin that this relation back doctrine applied to the post-conviction motions, and that was clearly incorrect. I don't foresee that recurring. But in any event, it's moot because this Court of Appeals, on its de novo review, did in fact consider his proposed amendment. It was found it was insufficiently pled in any event. It was without merit because there was no dispute that she and Buttercase had engaged in consensual sexual relations after they broke up and as recent as a month before this incident occurred, so it wouldn't have been exculpatory. But in any event, he has assigned six errors, and I intend to address only the first two, and that is the denials of his motion for DNA testing and his motion for new trial. I will submit the remainder of those claims on the brief unless the court, of course, has questions. With respect to his motion for DNA testing, Buttercase did not allege that DNA testing or that DNA testing conducted in this case was potentially erroneous or unreliable. Instead, he alleged only that the test results supported his defense and that the state's belated disclosure of the report prevented him from using it to his advantage at trial. Those allegations established at most a Brady violation. They did not provide additional justification or justification for additional DNA testing. Furthermore, although he generally alleged that the evidence could be retested.
I'm sorry, I'm not following you. You're working on the DNA motion or the new trial motion or both?
No, I'm doing the DNA motion first.
I mean,
yeah,
okay.
I'm sorry if I didn't make that clear.
The blower in the background is making it hard for me to hear you.
Oh, you
could
speak up
a little.
Okay, I'm sorry. Furthermore, although he generally alleged that the evidence could be retested using current technique or technology that could provide more accurate and probative results, he did not provide any evidence or present any evidence in support of that allegation. He did not identify any specific advancements in DNA testing technology that was superior to the technology that was utilized in this case and was thus likely to provide non-cumulative exculpatory evidence. But in any event, even if additional testing were ordered and disclosed the presence of a second male's DNA, it would not exculpate Buttercase for the reasons I argued in my brief. One, his DNA will still be present. Two, the test won't tell us when she had sex with a male or whether he caused her injuries. And perhaps most importantly, the undisputed evidence at trial showed that she could not have been raped and beaten by another male in the short time after she left his residence before she met with the police. The motion was properly denied. With respect to his motion for new trial, the state submits that none of his evidence is newly discovered. But I want to address two items specifically. The first is the video from the camcorder. During the investigation, the victim told the police that Buttercase sometimes videotaped their sexual encounters, so they seized the camcorder in the event that he had recorded part of the assault. Buttercase knew that his camcorder had been seized. He knew what was on it because he put it on there. And so to the extent that the state didn't produce these videos, which again I doubt, but in the event, to the extent that they didn't, that's an issue that should have been addressed long before the trial began and not years after it concluded. The videos are not newly discovered evidence. The second is the Facebook message. By his own admission, Buttercase received that message in April of 2013, which was more than 4 years before he filed his motion for new trial in this case. And when I pointed that out in my brief, he responded by saying, well, the message was in small print, and I didn't receive the entire exchange until March of 2016. And I guess my response to that, to put it bluntly, is so what? He clearly had it, and he could read it. And beyond that, the portion that he is relying on, or the portion that he had, is the only portion that he's ever relied upon to support his claim. It is not newly discovered evidence. And on a related note, Buttercase had that Facebook message when he moved to recuse Judge Corsland in his post-conviction proceeding, but did not rely on it. Nor did he mention it when he later filed his motion for return of seized property. Instead, he mentioned it for the first time on appeal from the district court's order denying that motion. And although this district court, or this court, rejected his claim, he raised it again 3 months later in his motion for new trial. And this reassertion of claims that have already been decided is a recurring theme with, or recurring problem with this defendant. And his successive motion for post-conviction relief is a prime example. That motion alleges every claim he has raised in this case, starting with his direct appeal. And he clearly has no concept of finality, and he seems to be laboring under the misconception that every time he files something new, he's writing on a clean slate. He isn't. The bottom line here is that all of his claims have either been previously rejected, could have been raised at an earlier time, but were not, or were plainly without merit. Nothing that he has alleged in any of these motions provide grounds for relief. So unless the court has questions, we would ask that you affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have any time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
We do not have any time for rebuttal. That concludes arguments for the day. The court is adjourned, and you are excused.
Thank you.
Thank you.